I'm Jeremy Greer.
I'm Chris Mosier.
And this is Non-Human Biologics, the creepy but necessary podcast that will lay its hands upon you and resurrect you on behalf of the Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, slipping into the Lord.
The Lord. Okay. That's what I'm talking about, Chris Mosier. The Lord.
I'd like to see you get your televangelist kind of energy out on this one.
I don't have a lot of energy in general nowadays, so it's gonna be a little bit difficult to get my televangelist energy out. But you got the Lord, and I think that's what matters. Yeah. And the Lord is with us all. So
just before we even get started, have you ever experienced anything like what they go to here? That, you know, they're in the big tent, there's a lot of energy going on, because I was raised Catholic, so everything I saw here, you go into a church and it's very somber and quiet and serious. But then I see this stuff in TV shows, and it's always like raucous, and it's always set in the South, which is why I ask.
So I have two experiences that I can tell you about. When I was in high school, my senior year physics teacher was also a preacher on the weekends.
Interesting combo.
Great dude. One of the most fantastic teachers. I wish I could remember his name, but my brain is full of Swiss cheese. But so one weekend, like, a bunch of people in the class, in the physics class, went to his church. And that was probably my first experience at a black church. And a black church is so incredibly different than, like, my great grandmother dragging me to a Methodist church or going to, like, a Baptist church. Like, people were having a great time. Like, they were dancing. Everybody was hollering.
When I see stuff like that, I think, could I have been a different person if that's what church was like? Because I loathed church. And now every time I step into one, I, like, genuinely get deeply uncomfortable.
My second experience was I dated a girl that was, oh crap, what do they call it when you can't wear pants? Presbyterian, Pentecostal. So I was dating a girl. I was out of high school. I was dating this girl that was Pentecostal. She was like Pentecostal on the weekends, right? So like
she wore pants during the week
because she went to the local college, right? Like, so she was definitely like trying to live in two worlds kind of thing. Sure. And one time for Easter, we went to her church. And I can't remember. No, it happened before. So like I saw her mom, who I had just met, like get possessed by the spirit and like do the whole like collapse on the ground, like have a seizure. Like I was genuinely worried as a 19-year-old child. I was genuinely worried for this old woman, and like her husband didn't seem to be stressed out too much. And like my girlfriend at the time was just like giving me these looks, like what are you doing? Like don't do anything, basically. And I was like, okay. And then like afterwards, like went back to their house for like evening supper and like set across.
And you got to pretend like you didn't just see your mom.
Set across from the woman. Set across from this woman. And had to have a conversation with her. And like, at this point in my life, I was agnostic. Like I wasn't full atheist. I would later become like, but I was very much like questioning the Lord at all times. So the fact that I even came to church was like a huge thing for the girlfriend and for the girlfriend's family. Like they really wanted to see me do that because they thought that we were going to get married, which is hilarious in hindsight.
It's like tough cut for them.
So those are my two church experiences that are close to this. I've never been to like a tent revival.
You never seen a man get healed by another man, or
never seen
perhaps murdered by another man.
Never seen anybody lay on hands in seriousness before.
Sure. You've never seen the ghost of a sister past or anything like that at one of these experiences.
No, never seen the ghost of a sister past. Right.
So what are we doing here? Have we thanked the patrons yet?
We haven't thanked the patrons over at patreon.com/monsterofthe week. They donate money every month so that I don't have to go to church on the weekends to save my soul, which is very nice.
That's right.
They also, despite saving my soul, they also get episodes of this podcast early and get access to our Discord server, which is super cool. Chris, remind us what's been happening on The X-Files, please.
All right. Last time on The X-Files, Mulder's relationship with Deep Throat was stretched to its limit as lines were crossed and double-crossed in pursuit of the truth, with reports of an EBE, extraterrestrial biological entity, Jeremy, being transported across America. Mulder and Scully found themselves at the center of a plot to conceal the existence of aliens on Earth. But even after overcoming a web of lies, Mulder and Scully still find themselves no closer to the truth.
We are covering X-Files Season 1, Episode 18, Miracle Man. A young man who has the power to heal people with his touch begins to question his gift when people start dying after he has supposedly healed them. This aired on March 18th, 1994, was directed by Michael Lang, was written by Chris Carter and Howard Gordon. Just remarking on the fact that Chris Carter wrote this episode, because it really feels like as the kind of the genesis of this entire show. Like, Chris Carter was like the genius in charge, right? Like, supposedly, like, he was the one who kind of spearheaded this whole effort.
Sometimes he can pump out a stinker.
Sometimes he just throws in these Monster of the Week episodes.
This isn't necessarily a stinker. No, it's just like, okay. But it's just, and I wonder if his involvement...
Go ahead.
It's just because of the Mulder sister thing.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. And also, like, the last episode, which was so heavy on the myth arc stuff, like, was not written by him at all, right? Like,
yeah,
he wasn't credited.
Interesting.
So it just makes me wonder. I'm curious. I want to ask you a question first and foremost. How long did it take you to realize that the dude in the weird white makeup in this episode was the guy from the cold open?
Quite a while. Quite a while.
Mine was like it was something like 25 minutes before I realized, yeah, like, that was
probably awesome. And I was like, oh, I thought he was just like a, yeah, not to be like really disrespectful, I just thought he was some sort of strange monster.
Yeah I thought he was just some weird guy, like, you know.
Well, there's the episode of Supernatural where they have a faith healer, and but the faith healer is really just tied to like a reaper, mm-hmm, which looks like almost a little bit like this. It's like a spooky, like, rotting, scary man in a suit.
Yeah.
So when I see this man, obviously he's a burn victim, which isn't scary. It's just sad, I guess. But when I saw him, I just thought, something's up with this man.
Something's going on. I thought the same thing. It didn't even occur to me. So our cold open starts in 1983 in Kenwood, Tennessee. We're on site of a car crash. There's fire emergency responders, firefighters out. At least one person is dead, and they have this body in a body bag, and they kind of roll it over. And this priest and his son comes up and starts, like, just opening the bag for no reason. And I'm like, who is, what are you doing? What are we doing here? Who is just allowing
people to...
Yeah,
why are we letting this kid in the body bag? We don't need this right now.
And the son is full hardcore televangelist. Like, we were doing this for the Lord. The Lord saith, the Lord, the Lord, the Lord, the Lord. Like, he is doing a whole routine as he lays hands on this body. A firefighter comes up.
Did he say the Lord or did he say the Lord?
He said the Lord. One of the trivia facts for this episode is that they hired a vocal coach to make everybody in all of the guest stars sound the same, so they didn't sound like they were from like 14 different places in the South. And nobody really sounds like they're from the South, but they all do sound vaguely the same. So I'm pretty impressed.
I guess
that's
true. I bet that must be a thing where people are just all doing different versions Southern accents, because there's a lot of different variations.
Because I imagine if you ask someone to do like a California accent, they'd be all over the place, right? Like, they,
yeah, I just,
you
know, do that SNL skit, the Californians.
Californians.
We don't need to get into that. So this little boy reaches into this body bag. They start singing about the Lord. And seemingly something that is done causes this supposedly dead man. His hand reaches out, and we see it's a charred, burnt up hand, and it reaches out and grabs the boy. And we know, well, this person's still alive.
Yep. This young child seems to have resurrected this man. We get our intro. The truth is out there, Chris. I don't know if you know that.
I was wondering if we had seen this before. Okay.
We go immediately into home video footage, is what this looks like, of the same preacher from 1983, except now it's obviously in 1994, where we're about 10 years later. Mm-hmm. And going through like his like revival thing, there's a lady like laid out on a table, like they're obviously going to do some laying on hand stuff. The video pauses and Scully looks to Mulder and starts explaining this, and Mulder's like, Scully, way ahead of you. Known about this dude for years.
Reverend Calvin Hartley, his weird adopted son Samuel, I'm on top of it.
way ahead of this. Like, I bet you don't even know that the guy behind them in the weird suit is the guy from the cold open. And she's like, there's a cold open on this show? That nobody ever told me about a cold open.
Mulder's like, that weird Frankenstein's monster over there. She's like, well, he's a burn victim.
He's
chill.
A burn victim, Mulder.
That's horribly offensive.
Chill out. Jesus Christ. They've been doing these miracle shows for 10 years now, for over a decade. And the local authorities really want to shut him down because they think he's a scam, but now they're after the young kid for murder. And as they resume the tape and watch, the preacher guy like goes on his long, olawed fucking tirade, and then this young man Samuel supposedly heals this woman, and then Scully looks over at Mulder and says, but 20 minutes later she was dead in the hospital. And I love this moment particular because it's Scully pitching a case, and I like the fact that they're like on a two-party system with these cases, and she even says here, I know this isn't an X-File, and he just totally dismisses it. He's like, when do we leave? Like, when are we going?
He's like, yeah,
I'm into this. Like, this is my vibe.
He's being really supportive, and he's right there, like, no matter what. But also, he doesn't say it, but he's like, no, yes, it is an X-File.
Yeah, yeah, this is totally an X-File. Absolutely.
But because they're bringing in Scully because they want a medical expert because they need to examine these bodies. They haven't been allowed to examine these bodies yet. So they head on down to Tennessee.
Time to go to Tennessee. They arrive at this preacher's tent where they are going to watch him do his show. We see a local sheriff ask his wife to stay in the car as he like goes to look for Mulder and Scully. The sheriff is going to be present. I thought this was a weird moment. Everything about the sheriff and his wife, I think, is kind of weird, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. There's a B plot that they just never sort of touched.
Which is like an X-Files thing now that I'm realizing.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like they add a lot of these details and then just like, okay, we're good.
And I feel like it's half of these are not this episode clearly, but I just feel like half of these scripts are written as movies and then they're pared down to an episode of a TV show.
Sure, maybe so. Maybe they just won't need a longer time in the oven. They watch the preacher who tells the reverend, I guess that we can call him, because I just called him preacher because I didn't catch his name at the beginning of the episode. They watch the reverend do his spiel and kind of disappoint the crowd when he says that Samuel's not going to be there today, but he is going to be back in 2 days. And the reverend says that Samuel can heal all of them, but only if they believe.
Yeah, and I guess I'm predisposed to just assume, like, okay, this guy's a con artist. He's screwing people over. So I'm actually pretty surprised by the characterization of this reverend throughout the episode. Because right after this part, when Mulder and Scully go up to talk to him, he's a little bit rude to them, but he's actually not as, like, he just didn't seem the way I expected him to seem.
Yeah, he's, they really could have written this dude into a shitbag kind of character.
Yeah.
Instead, they kind of treat him with a little humanity, and towards the end, like, you actually get like a little sympathy for him for what he goes through in this episode. That said, like, it's real difficult for me to watch anybody take money from poor people and promise them stuff and then like justify that behavior at all. The fact that this dude lives in a pink mansion, I think, says a lot about him.
Yeah.
Like,
it's a pretty garish move.
It's exactly the same mansion that towards the end of Better Call Saul, like, you see that Saul was living in at one point. Like, that's the vibe of this character, right? Like, that's the kind of general, like, shitbaggery we're dealing with, even if he is an actual human. They try to interview this dude. They're kind of put off by this pale man in a dark suit. This is Lance, who, again, me and Chris did not realize was the character from the cold open until much, much later in the episode.
Yeah.
So he's got obvious, like, he's got a bunch of makeup on covering his bird victims. Like, he's obviously ashamed of the way that he looks, which I didn't think would come up, but surprisingly does at the end of the episode, which is kind of fascinating. And then eventually the reverend and his man Lance get into their Cadillac and jet out of town, which is when the sheriff shows up.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. Help me out here.
Oh, so the sheriff shows up. He's got the coroner's report, and he doesn't make any. He doesn't hide the fact that he hates this dude, right? Like, he says,
fucking hates him.
This guy has like a Cadillac for every day. He remembers him like picking up like copper pins or something. He says, like, I don't remember exactly, but like, he remembers this dude like coming up and like not being the success that he is now. And he kind of, you could just tell he just kind of hates this motherfucker. Like, he just really, really dislikes this reverend.
Yeah. And so Mulder's like, okay, yeah, sure, he sounds like a shitbag, but like, that's not murder. But now suddenly these people that Samuel is touching, they're dying. And Samuel, of course, doesn't know what's happening. But they've been looking for this boy for about a week now. Can't find him. And they haven't been able to do any autopsies on religious grounds. So that's essentially why the FBI are here, to overstep this and to finally push for some progress.
Yep.
So we get to see something that we saw nearly every episode of Supernatural, but hardly ever get to see it in any of the other shows we've covered.
Digging
so
up a
thank
body.
God, that night, they go to the cemetery to dig up a body.
I love it. I love a good nighttime fucking exhumation. That's my jam. Yeah. Why do it in the daylight? Always do the exhumation in the dark.
Why do it in the daylight when you can do it at night in the rain?
Always.
In Vancouver.
way more moody when you do it that way. Yeah, so they're digging up the body so that they can do autopsies.
They dig
it
up and they're like, oh shit, it's an orangutan.
Oh no, we've dug up another orangutan. Can't believe we have to go back to the pilot for this. they are in the process of doing this when, like, the congregation from this Reverend's church shows up.
It was a little spooky for a second. It gave me, like, Resident Evil 4 feelings of just this massive, like, villagers coming up.
And you can tell, like, everybody there is a little spooked out by it. And the sheriff is like, I tried to hide this so that they wouldn't be here. But obviously there's some true believers in his organization who leaked this. And they're there to stop this. So this is a group of people that are doing a candlelight vigil led by Vance, who insists that, you know, the family doesn't want the body disturbed and insists that they are this person's family. Like they are the people that can be in control of this. Basically, like you said, like opposing this on religious grounds. Like they don't want this investigated at all. Which is suspicious. Like, why would you not want to know?
It's a little bit suspicious if you ask me. But they're like, okay, we clearly can't do this right now. Nobody's going to allow this to happen. I like that Scully tries, like, she almost seems like she's coming from a place of compassion. Like, we just have to test this body. We have to figure out what's going on. But they're not listening to her. They answer to a higher power, you know? But just then, they get a lead that Samuel is back in town, and he basically just got picked up for getting into a bar fight.
Yeah, he's back in town just like the boys are, Chris. I don't know if you remember
boys are back in town.
He's
back in town like the boys, and they can't do anything here, so they're just going to go look into him.
Yeah, so they drive over to downtown to this bar where Samuel is obviously drunk. He's also smoking a cigarette, so like we get the impression that like this dude
is kind of a bad boy.
Like he's kind of like you wouldn't want your daughter dating him, Chris. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like if you had a daughter, you'd be like, no, you cannot go out with Samuel, the faith healer, the fallen faith healer. Dude, what if your daughter brought home a faith healer? Like, can you imagine?
A fallen faith healer?
Yeah, like that's what she tells you about it.
Faith healer is one thing. Yeah. But
he's great, but you need to know some things about him, Daddy, before I go on this date with this man. He's 27, and you're like, well, that doesn't seem good.
Yeah, that's troubling. Samuel of the Fallen Faith, I'd be like, okay, well, I need to hear his backstory and his boss music.
What's his lore? Yeah. Is he related to Artorias? Is that something that we know?
Because you could still sell me on this.
You could turn me around, right? Now I'm at a 0 out of 10, but you could turn me around depending on what the backstory is. Absolutely.
So they go into the bar, they find Samuel. Obviously he's all beat up, he's smoking, he's drinking. He's just gonna get arrested because he just kind of assumes his own guilt, and Mulder asks the sheriff to just give him a minute to talk to him, and he sits down with him. And Samuel starts talking to Mulder and Scully, and he said, like, I was beat up for this is penance. The Lord giveth and taketh away. I was too proud, so they had to come kick the shit out of me a little bit.
I want to, before we move past this, I just want to talk about the phrasing that he uses here, because he talks about like being too proud and having to get the shit kicked out of him. And he says that, you know, sometimes that saves God the time. And Mulder's like, what do you mean saves God? He's like, oh, it saves God. I wrote it down. Where did it go? Saves God the trouble of humbling a guilty sinner. And that is just like the most Dean Winchester line that I've ever heard in my entire life. Like Dean in his cups would be like, I need to be humbled as a guilty sinner should only be humbled. And I just wanted to call that out before we move past it.
Yeah. Okay. No, fair enough. Let's see. So, okay. He says that he's guilty of murder, even though he doesn't know what's going on, as we're going to find out. But he just admits to being guilty of murder. He says his gift was corrupted by his own pride. He got muddied up with the devil. And Scully's just sitting there like, yeah, but you're an imposter. This isn't real.
I love that he like talks about stuff, and he's like, you know, the Lord gave me this gift, and she's like, did he also give you all that jewelry? Because he's like, he's kind of wearing some bling. He's kind of wearing a little bit of bling.
He's kind of blinged out a little bit. She's like,
No. She's like, I'm Catholic. You shouldn't be having any of that stuff. All of that stuff should go to the Pope.
I'm appropriately self-hating.
That would be my third like weird religious experience. I may have told you about this before, but going to the Vatican and seeing the Pope throne. Was something that I was a young man. I was 24 when that happened, and it just turned me away from all religion, specifically Catholic religion. Like it's just on the dot. Like, going to the Colosseum in Rome and seeing like empty spots where stuff should have been, and then going to the Vatican and seeing where all of the stuff that was in the empty spots is now. You're like, oh, okay. Well, okay, so you just took all of this stuff. Interesting. Anyway, I won't go on about my hatred for the Catholic Church.
I had to go to, you know, Sunday school essentially and do all that stuff for Catholicism. But the first time they got me when I was like, this shit ain't for me. I was a nervous little boy, and they made us go to confession for the first time. And you see confession in the movies, and people go into the pulpit, and they got the screen in front of them. They didn't do that for me. They just sat me in front of a man.
Oh, no.
And I don't know what his original language was, but he didn't really speak English, so I couldn't tell what he was saying. And he was getting really angry at me because I wasn't answering his questions, and I'm supposed to just sit there, like, look him in the face and just tell him my 11-year-old boy sins. And it was horrifying.
Which, like, what sins could you possibly have at 11 years old?
You disobey your parents, you swear or take the Lord's name in vain, shit like that.
Oh,
it was so scarring. Obviously, having to be face-to-face while a lot of other kids got to go in and have their privacy. But then I just couldn't tell what he was saying. And he's telling me I'm supposed to say certain prayers, but I didn't know what he was saying. And I was so freaked out that it turned me away forever. That was it. That was the moment.
That was the moment. Well, thank God you got out when you did, because I've heard nothing but bad thing happens to little boys of the Catholic Church.
Yeah. At that point, I was already like 6'2", so they weren't that interested in me. But yeah.
So you already look like a grown man. So,
yeah.
It's at this point where this guy starts getting a little weird. He starts talking about the pain on Mulder's face.
He's like, you got pain in your heart, I think.
He senses that Mulder is missing. It's an old pain, he says. And he says something about a brother or a sister. And Scully immediately thinks that this dude is just doing a trick. And the episode doesn't really confirm or deny what is happening here at all. Like, it seems weird that this dude would have the power to of suggestion and healing, right? Like, you don't get two, you only get the one.
Right. Right.
But his talking of Mulder's sister, obviously excites Mulder to a degree, because that's one of the longest mysteries of his life. That is the longest mystery of his life. And he describes the night that Mulder saw her last as, being taken away under bright lights with strangers. And Mulder wants to know more. And Scully's trying to shut it down. She brings a sheriff over to, actually arrest the dude. And as the dude is leaving with the cuffs on, he looks back at Mulder and says, God watches over his flock, so maybe if you opened your heart, you might just open your eyes. Mulder is a bit flummoxed by this. You can tell, he's kind of what the fuck just happened to me kind of vibe, because he's anything with his sister is obviously going to hit close to his heart, the pain in his heart.
The pain in his heart.
And anything that if he believes that anybody knows anything about it, he just instantly seizes on it. It consumes him. So
I think that Scully immediately does recognize that. I think that's part of it. She's like, oh, he's being manipulated again. We just went through this whole thing with Deep Throat. Now he's being manipulated by some boy who thinks he can talk to God. Like, get your shit together, Mulder. You're so smart. How do you keep falling into these traps? But no, I mean, he's pulling at the heartstrings for Mulder. So cut over to court, where Samuel is having his hearing. And he is arguing very loudly that he should not be set free.
Yes. He wants to stay there.
Yeah. And the judge is like, first of all, shut the fuck up. This isn't a sermon. You're not at the pulpit. But he sets bail at $100,000. He's like, okay, fine, yeah. We're not keeping you, but we're setting you a high bail for you.
Yeah.
Which is
not suddenly, that's not a high bail, by the way. Like, that's bail bonds. It's like ten grand in cash, maybe. So
all right.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Interesting. Then locusts fill the room. So I don't know what
this
type
was
of
such a surprise.
Such a surprise. And we're gonna find out in a few minutes. They were grasshoppers, and I don't know if those are actually just the same thing, and locusts are just a more terrifying name for a grasshopper. But it was really funny to me when it was revealed to be grasshoppers.
When they're flying in your hair, it doesn't matter what the fuck they are. They're just horrible bugs. And this thing just fills with bugs immediately. They're flying around. They're all over the place. It's extremely strange. And Samuel, in the midst of this chaos, stands up in his chair and starts yelling that the Lord has testified against him. And as everybody rushes out, we see the sheriff out there kind of watching all of the chaos, not bothering to go into it. We skip ahead a little bit, and Scully is analyzing one of the bugs, while Mulder reads from the Bible, talking about the plague of locusts.
Yeah. She's like, "Oh, brother, stop!" And also, I just googled grasshoppers and locusts are the same thing, or a locust is a form of a grasshopper. But calling it a grasshopper really just it just kind of takes the drama out of it.
It really does. Yeah, I call it just a room full of grasshoppers. You're like, well, that doesn't sound bad.
Like a grasshopper, that's cute. That's fun.
But I guess if you got above 100 grasshoppers in a room, I'd be a little concerned. Maybe
you had above four. If there was four grasshoppers in my podcast room right now, I'd be freaked the fuck out.
You would
out.
Be a little freaked out, I think. I can go up to 100 though, because I'm just
you
that man.
It.
I'm
You're
just that
different.
Guy.
You're built different.
I'm built different. Absolutely. like, when it comes to grasshoppers, I'm built different.
Yeah.
See, Mulder is kind of on this, is on one, as he usually is, and Scully's trying to bring him back, saying it's not part of a plague, and wondering if, like, this kind of intensity has anything to do with Samuel bringing up his sister. And Mulder pulls out, and this is one of my favorite things about Mulder. I've talked about it a lot, but, like, he's a very detail-oriented dude. And so, like, he went and got medical reports from the people that were, quote-unquote, treated by Samuel. Basically, like, doing the actual legwork. Not just, like, saying he's a faith healer and then accepting that, but, like, going through and trying to actively disprove it by trying to get medical reports from everybody. So,
and that's the thing about Mulder, is that it's so easy to laugh him off as, like, being this, like, this nut job, essentially, who believes in all these conspiracies and he believes in anything paranormal he encounters, but that's not true. And like you said, he's always doing the legwork. Like, as soon as he hears this thing, it gets him excited to then go and do the research. Exactly. And when he finds that the research shows nothing, then he has to drop and the excitement dies. But he's not just jumping to the conclusion. He's doing the research first.
Love it. There's a knock at the door, and Vance is here, and they are invited to the enormous pink mansion that the Reverend lives in, where they sit down in his office and talk about Samuel. And he describes Samuel as innocent, even though Samuel's already, like, confessed to these murders. And he also describes Samuel as very sensitive, where, like, a pinprick would feel like a gaping wound. And he also talks about how the sheriff has had, like, a longstanding grudge against him, and he talks about the sheriff's wife. And this is the bleep plot that I didn't really understand why we went here at all. But the sheriff's wife has arthritis and won't, but he refuses to let Samuel treat her. And I'm like, yeah, because Samuel's a fucking faith healer. Like, he just probably wants her to go to the doctor. Like, that's no big deal.
That's so normal. It's such a normal thing. He's a non-believer, and he doesn't like all these people getting scammed, and he doesn't want his wife to get scammed. I mean, it's a good thing because these people are actually getting poisoned.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And during this conversation, something strange happens. Mulder looks outside the window and sees a little girl in a red dress, and just immediately gets up and, like, chases after her. And as he gets outside, of course, the girl is gone. There's a caretaker outside who says, like, there is no girl here. There's no little girls here. Scully comes out and is like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? You just left in the middle of this interview. That was really weird. And he's like, he just looks kind of confused by the whole thing. Like, you can tell, again, he's once again just discombobulated by this stuff with his sister.
Yeah, I'm always unnerved by a haunting little girl.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. If you put a child in, like, a weird haunting spot, man, I'm going to get a little weirded out by it. Period.
A child where a child's not supposed to be.
Absolutely,
It's just spooky. It's just something spooky about it. What are you doing here?
Which, in my childless old age now, I'm just like, children shouldn't be anywhere. You should leave.
You
should
a child
leave
in your house, and you're like, I am calling the police.
Yeah. Why did you bring
your
child?
Which, I mean,
to the restaurant?
I guess you should.
Yeah.
Why'd you bring this child to the restaurant?
Why did you bring him to the restaurant? Children don't need to be at restaurants. They don't need social experiences. They don't need to learn how to exist in social spaces. They just need to be left at home so I can have a good time getting drunk at the bar. Am I on one right now? I feel like Mulder a little bit.
No, it's fine. You're allowed to be on one.
I feel like I'm a little bit on one right now. This is when I realized, as they head back to the tent, and we see people coming in excited about Samuel. We see this woman specifically in a wheelchair that Vance is going to sit at the front so she can have an opportunity to meet Samuel. This is when I realized. This is how long it took me to realize that Vance was the guy. From
the same. Oh, I'm pretty sure this was the moment for me too. And I was like, oh, that's right. It's him.
It's the guy with those are burns.
It's that guy.
Those are burns.
And he promises this woman, like, hey, we're gonna get you cooked up. Don't worry about it. I don't mean cooked up like me.
Yeah.
Not like
just a little burn.
Not that kind of cooked up.
Just a little burn humor for you there. He healed me, but he didn't heal me all the way. You know what I'm saying?
Burn humor for you.
But a burn humor. What?
It's so dark. I mean, I know I'm doing it, but it's still dark.
It's a little bit of burn humor. Oh man. Samuel was a little worried about going out there. He feels like he can't do it. And, of course, the Reverend
He feels like he's
going
to fucking kill somebody.
Yeah, the Reverend's insisting. And it's time to go out and do, like, the full-on revival thing. I don't know if you've watched True Detective. I was watching some True Detective where they do one of these, like, revival tent things. And season one. And Matthew McConaughey has, like, a long rambling, like, what the fuck are you talking about thing about, like, people grasping at these straws and what it means for our, you know, universe and for our whatever. But it just really, like, even stereotypical TV representations of this stuff, I just, like, it leaves such a bad taste in my mouth. Like, I can hardly even watch it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hardly ever shown in a positive light.
That's true. Like, there's never any, and everything worked out okay at the end of this. It's always, yeah. And then somebody got murdered. It's yeah, always the
right,
end of this.
Right. It's always somebody got fucking murdered.
Just a little bit of revival humor there for you folks. Nobody's right, actually getting murdered tonight.
Right. Come on.
Hey, I'm here all week. Except twice on Sundays. You know what I'm saying?
You gotta die to be revived. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You gotta put a little, what do they call that? You gotta put a horse in the race. You gotta have a little, ink in the pin. That's what I'm talking about.
So Mulder and Scully are in the audience. Yes. They're ready to watch this happen. And just then, Mulder, once again, he spots that haunting little girl. And he just, like, gets up and, like, starts pushing his way through the crowd to get to her. And Scully's like, what's happening? Bathroom break?
They also skip the collection plate. I just wanted to mention that.
Oh, yeah, skipped the collection plate. Because, yeah, they're raking in some cash here. Let's not beat around the bush. And that's what makes them seem like they're running a scam. But, yeah, so the Samuel begins. Mulder has run off to find the girl. He can't find her. Samuel has come out. He's gone through. He's touching everybody's faces. Let the healing begin. And then he gets to the woman who we saw Vance speaking to before. He tries to do his little healing with her, has her close her eyes. The next thing we know, suddenly she dies.
Yeah.
And we know, obviously, Samuel is immediately, as upset as anybody else. He can't believe that this just happened again. And he's kind of dragged away into the back. But obviously, this wasn't on purpose. But this is very strange. This is very strange.
It's the intensity of this moment is, I think, really interesting. Just from a directing performance, because they've got so many extras in the room and there's right. so many people shouting. And as she begins to spasm right before she dies, Scully is obviously like making her way up front, calling for an ambulance. But the Reverend is like, nobody panic. Everything's cool. Everybody chill. Like just trying to calm down, like keep the crowd calm down. Which I found just kind of interesting and fascinating, just like the two dynamic, the two like opposing kind of processes that the two people do.
Right.
But yeah, this chick just dies in the chair. And then outside, we skip to like outside of the police station or the coroner's building. I forget which one. Vance is there talking to the congregation and again is like stressing to the congregation that they should keep the body intact, which is kind of a weird thing to do. Like, why?
This motherfucker doesn't want autopsies happening.
I know.
Woman seemingly just had a sudden aneurysm.
Which is what Scully tells the father of this woman. I don't have the names of any of these people, so there's just going to be the woman and the dad for a little while. But basically just like puts the father on the spot with saying like, I know you're getting a lot of pressure for not doing an autopsy, but like, are you going to be content burying her without knowing if there was any foul play involved? Mm-hmm. And it's obvious like she kind of wins him over, but he still has to go check with the wife first, which is when she goes and talks to Mulder for a little while.
And yeah, she's basically like, so what do you keep doing? Who do you keep seeing? And she immediately catches on, like, it's your sister, isn't it? Mulder is like, he insists he's not delusional, but she is like, I'm not calling you delusional, but, you know, Samuel has used, you know, his powers of suggestion on you. Healer's greatest magic is the patient's willingness to believe. He found that thing in you, that thread, and he pulled on it, and now you're just following along. And for Mulder, for all the legwork he does on these cases, you know, he gets strung along a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like she said in the last episode, the truth is out there, but so are lies, right? Like, there's also a really great exchange here where they talk about whether or not the kid actually did it, where Samuel actually could have done it. And Scully says she doesn't think so because growing up in the Catholic Church, she knows that God never lets the devil steal the show. And he says to her, you must have really liked The Exorcist. And she's like, that was one of my favorite movies, which is really great. I love these kind of exchanges and like the kind of it's this kind of writing that makes me really, really like the show. Right. Yeah. Like
they help make them feel like real people and not just super agents all the time, which is what you need. It's what you need to ground them. And just then the family has now agreed to go along with the autopsy. So we cut right over to scrubbed up Scully, and she is sinisterly sharpening her knife to make these incisions.
I am fascinated by the idea that the FBI, an FBI agent, would just do an autopsy. Like, that is just hilarious to me.
I know she's a medical doctor, but this is a lot.
This is a lot. Especially that Mulder is in there unscrubbed up and having to watch, which he
unscrubbed
does,
up, just sitting on the counter.
Yeah, you tell he's just trying not to be sick. He's like, oh my God.
Wait outside, Mulder. What are you doing?
All of my Ruth Chris is about to come up. I'm going to have to go to Ruth Chris twice on this trip if we have to do another Mulder, another autopsy.
At least scrub up. up, Mulder.
Yeah, at least put some fucking clothes on, my man. Like, why are you
puke on yourself?
Later, Scully shows Mulder some lesions on the woman's lungs. She's also found some other evidence that supports the fact that this woman was poisoned, potentially by cyanide. So Mulder immediately goes to Samuel in jail and is like, hey, I'm here to get you out. Like, your hearing is tomorrow. There's no evidence to support that you're in here. There's evidence to say that these people were poisoned, which I don't think that you did. Like, there's no way that you could possibly have done this. And Samuel actually, like, refuses to believe this. He believes that because of his lack of faith, like, the Lord is punishing him by killing these people, which is interesting. They don't really, like, explore this lack of faith thing very, very long, but it's just kind of, it's kind of interesting that he believes this, like, that he's this much into it, that he still believes in all of this stuff as much as he does. Which, yeah, I guess if I could literally heal people by laying my hands on them, maybe I would be more religious, or maybe I would just be like, it's X-Man time. Like, I don't know which way I would go.
And as we've seen, he's kind of a bad boy. So I wonder if he thinks that, you know, they got too rich, he prospered too much, and then he kind of just started being a little bit too wild, and that's why it suddenly turned on him. Because we only get glimpses of this kid's life outside of healing people.
You think he took ecstasy once, got his dick wet, now he's like, oh, I can't, the Lord hates me now.
Yeah, I got muddied up with the devil, you know what I mean? That's what he meant. That's exactly what he
meant. I took some
meant.
Mollies with two twins, and now the Lord hates me.
Yeah. And he does. He does hate you, Samuel. You screwed up.
He really does.
Mulder
says the dad.
Mulder is, he's like, well, it doesn't really matter what you think, because the law is still going to find you innocent, even if you don't think that. But he's like, come on, you saw that pain in my heart before, you saw the thing about my sister, so tell me, look at me now and tell me what you see. And Samuel looks at Mulder and he says he sees nothing, he can't see anything anymore. But Mulder's like, that's not true, you made my sister appear, there's some shit going on. Is my sister alive, or are you just tricking me? He says something about how, like, only the devil tricks or something.
Yeah. The sheer desperation coming off of Mulder here is kind of hard to watch a little bit. But see, like, is she alive? Like, just that one question. Mm-hmm. Like, is she even out there? And then, yeah, like, he says the thing, like, is this some sort of trick? And he's like, you mean the trick of the devil? And Mulder is like, okay, I'm done with you. Like, he gets big mad. He walks through this extremely moody jail cell. Yeah.
He screams out for the jailer.
Yeah. He walks out, he runs into the sheriff and tells the sheriff, like, hey, I'm not going to argue with you. The boy is innocent. Like, as you waste time doing this, the real killer is out there. Like, you know, you can do what you want to. I'm not going to argue with you about it, but, like, you got the wrong guy. And then later, and I found this really strange as well. This is another, like, B plot sheriff thing that I don't understand why we're dealing with it. The cops led a couple of just, like, randos into Samuel's room to beat him up, I guess, for, like, killing some people. I don't.
It makes it seem like the sheriff is the one who's setting him up. 100% healer.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's not the one setting him up. But he is still trying to take him out.
It's very, very strange. There's even, like, some weird imagery where they show, like, this dude, like, pushed up against the jail cell wall, like the actual, like,
yeah,
and then, like,
he's being crucified,
like, he's being crucified,
being,
yeah, like, he's got the whole shadow thing looks, and it's just like, why are we doing this? And then we get introduced
to this whole thing.
We get introduced to Tyson, who is, like, the sheriff's deputy. Why does he get a name? Why do I know it? I don't know why I know this guy's name. It's
just, a lot starts to unfold here. Do we miss the fact where, like, the sheriff and Vance are working together? That's not a thing.
That's
right?
Not a thing. I don't think that the show doesn't seem to think. Maybe it's Chris Mosier's patented X-Files headcanon coming into effect right there.
That's right. The sheriff has been working with Leonard Vance
to bring it down from the inside.
The freak to bring it down from the inside.
So the sheriff's deputy comes up to the sheriff's house, tells him that Samuel died the night before. So Samuel not only, like, got beat up, but, like, got beat up so bad that he died. And then we skip to in front of the jail cell where Mulder and Scully are there, like, wondering how it happened. And the sheriff kind of makes up a bogus reason, saying that he picked a fight with some DUI people. The Reverend and Vance show up. They yell at the sheriff. He says that the boy was blessed and never hurt anybody in his life. Mulder, meanwhile, is just kind of staring at the jail cell, and Scully calls him out and says, like, you've got that look on your face, like you've kind of forgotten where your keys are and you're trying to get back in the house. Like, he's trying to, like, solve a puzzle, right? Like, and sure enough, that's when we start looking for clues.
Yeah. So they go to the courthouse, right? And then they... They're trying to investigate these grasshoppers. What kind of, you know, what better clue than the corpse of a grasshopper? And they look up and they realize, oh shit, those grasshoppers came in through the vents. Like, something's up here. So they go up on the roof of the courthouse, and sure enough, they see that somebody has left out potatoes.
Grasshopper's favorite food, potatoes.
Yeah.
I put in my notes that he found a weird rock, and then he was like, this is a potato. And I was like, oh, I guess it's a potato. My bad. Yeah. It just looks like
backspace,
a weird rock.
Backspace. Yeah.
Grasshoppers like potatoes. Is that a thing?
But it's like a specific type of like a I don't know if it's not a pesticide, but something that like lures them in, I guess. So, and it was ordered special from somewhere.
Are they horny for the
clue.
Potatoes? Is that what it is?
They're horny for the potatoes.
Do they fuck the tots?
I didn't want to be the one to tell you this.
Are they fucking the tots, Chris?
They're fucking the tots.
Are they fucking the tots? I don't want to.
And if the grasshoppers get at the potatoes that are going out for human consumption, they might have fucked those tots.
They may have fucked
those
tots. Yeah,
that's why they got to get decoy tots for the grasshoppers to fuck.
That's going
to
ruin my Sonic experience from now on. I'm not going to be able to look at a Sonic tot without thinking a grasshopper fucked that.
A French fry again.
Oh man, we're making French fries tonight. We're having a little fry out tonight.
Brother, you better check them for grasshopper holes.
Definitely checking them for grasshoppers. That's no question right there. So they figure out like an actual person did this. Like this wasn't just a holy like plague thing. That night, and this is another really strange thing that happens in this episode. It's raining. We're at the Reverend's house, the Pink Mansion. I keep calling it the Pink Mansion because it's a Pink Mansion, everybody. Like, why did they do this? And Samuel appears as a ghost.
Yeah, ghost form. Yep.
Ghost form in front of Vance, who is in bed, and demands to know why Vance betrayed him. Like, the reveal here is, like, because we still don't know. Like, Mulder and Scully haven't figured it out quite yet. Like, they were in the process of figuring out. But, like, we don't know this. I kept thinking it was the sheriff doing this. Like...
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's Vance, who is apparently just very unhappy that he doesn't not have burns, that he doesn't have scars.
He got brought back, but he was brought back incomplete. He's probably in terrible pain, I guess, if he still has all these burns. And he's unhappy about it, and for some reason he conspired to ruin Samuel for it.
But only like in recent years, like only in the last year or so, which is kind of weird. And he wanted to do this in such a way as to break people's faith in Samuel and to also like break Samuel's faith. Like, it's not just enough that he like gets revenge on the dude, like whatever revenge looks like in Vance's mind. Like, he actually wants to like ruin this dude's entire fucking situation.
Not cool, if you ask me. But at the same time that this ghost is haunting Vance,
this literal ghaust person is
this literal ghost is haunting
with
him
like a
from
white
beyond the grave.
Edge light off this edge of his body, like that they fucking photoshopped in or whatever, that they CGI'd in. Like, it's crazy that there's just a ghost in this episode. Like, there's just a ghost. Yeah.
And I guess we could say, oh, it was his dream, but that's not how it was presented to us. Mulder and Scully have, in fact, tracked down who purchased this very specific horny grasshopper potatoes, and it led back to Vance. So now they know he made this purchase. They know he's behind this. Maybe he's bought some poison or some shit too. They tracked it. They figured out it was him.
Yeah, they show up at the Peak Mansion and demand. You know, they've got a warrant for his arrest. They go up there and find that he has already poisoned himself. Scully smells the glass and is like, "That smells like cyanide," which is a real Dean Winchester. How do you know what chloroform smells like? Kind of situation, but she determines like they need to get him to a hospital now. He's ranting and raving, kind of rambling about religion and Samuel, and eventually comes out with his last words that Samuel was there in person with him and that he forgave him, which doesn't seem like the vibe that Samuel was giving off when we last saw him. But you know, whatever, like, it's your dying words.
What do we know?
Yeah,
yeah.
Vance dies. And we cut almost immediately to Scully writing up her report on the incident, slowly but surely becoming one of my favorite parts of the episodes. She talks about Vance being obsessed with breaking people's faith in Samuel and doubts that there were ever any miracles that ever happened.
But just then, we learned the episode ain't over quite yet.
No, because we've still got 3 or 4 minutes left for some reason.
Yeah. We get a call. We don't. Mulder and Scully get a call, or Mulder does. Samuel's body is missing. So they go over to the coroner's office, and the night nurse explains that she saw Samuel not being taken, but walking out on his own. And she says she's not crazy. She says she knows what she saw. But this is just sort of like left open-ended. The boy's body is gone, and we don't know what the hell happened.
Yeah, there's not much to it. We get some follow-up on the sheriff. Because our buddy Tyson, the deputy, who's a named character in this episode, comes to fetch the sheriff to go answer questions from the DA about Samuel's death. Like, obviously, like, yeah. So we obviously know that the sheriff, like, allowed this to happen, and like, he had such a grudge against the dad that he allowed this kid to get murdered under his care, which seems extremely aggressive to me, which is very strange.
Very aggressive.
Meanwhile, Scully and Mulder are like near the tent site where the revival was set up. I'm watching it being,
yeah, this town has basically been like ripped open because their religious center has been kind of upended, and now their sheriff has been, you know, arrested for murder, essentially. He was being investigated for it. So they've been shattered, and it's just left with Mulder and Scully to have a quick convo before they head out.
And they talk about, Scully says that she, you know, hopefully it's not the reverend that stole the body to like create the story about, you know, him being resurrected. And Mulder is like, I think people are looking too hard for miracles, so they see what they want to believe. And as he says that, he sees his sister in the reflection of a car window, turns around, and the sister is not there. And then they drive off, and the last thing we see are like the pictures of Samuel from the revival tent, like now in the trash can. Pretty big bummer there to throw some pictures of your son away, my man, but whatever.
Sorry, dude.
Weird thing about inheriting stuff from old people is like you have pictures of your family and you're like, I don't want these. I don't know who these people are.
I don't know who any of these people are. Sorry, trash.
But yeah, what a weird ending for an episode. Like in the X-Files, it's kind of known for their weird endings where they leave these things open. But like the body snatching, the body disappearing, the ghost body, the
Mulder
sheriff.
Mulder seeing his sister's ghost
Mulder
everywhere.
Seeing his sister everywhere. Is that real? Like it's just all over the place. And I dig it. Don't get me wrong. Like I'm here for it. Like I want some messiness with this stuff. Like I'm excited about it, I guess is what you would
say. An interesting episode where everything almost seems to have a logical explanation or an extreme explanation,
exactly.
That's what you want. Yeah. That's what you want.
Just a fascinating piece of work too. Just like a couple of scenes in here just really stick out to me. Like the Mulder walking through the jail cell and looking so moody. All of the like tent revival things were apparently filmed on the same day because they just had a bunch of they wanted to get all the extras there at one time, and so they did all of that in one day, which seems like a lot of work to me. But just a really kind of fascinating and interesting episode. I love a little glimpse into Scully's religious background, because she doesn't really say that she's like still Catholic, just that she was raised Catholic. So kind of interesting, I guess, digression, but an interesting,
I think there's a little bit more of that coming up, but I can't quite remember where it happens.
I feel like it has to, like we're not going to get far. I mean, she wears a gold cross constantly. So
that's
like,
true. That is true.
What else, Chris?
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
That's it. It's all right. It's an all right episode. It's pretty good.
It's a pretty good episode. I'm digging these Monster of the Week episodes even more so than the Myth Arc episodes so far.
But they still sprinkled in a little bit. The stuff with Mulder's sister, they're keeping us on the hook just a little bit.
We very much appreciate all of you out there who are listening to the podcast, especially those that are patrons over at patreon.com/monsterofthe week, especially people that are telling their friends and family that are watching X-Files for the first time. We've gotten a lot of people into X-Files for the first time. This happened recently on Twitter, where somebody was like, should I watch it? And everybody was like, absolutely, yes, you should watch it. Like 100%. Thank you to everybody leaving reviews and ratings on the podcast. We very much appreciate that. We'll be back next week. And remember, until then, stay spooky.
I didn't have any problems getting into Discord.
Oh, wow. That's weird. So we're going to have tons of technical issues then.
This is very strange. I don't know how to feel about this.
Update from the UFO Hunters Facebook page. Somebody recorded a picture of the sun and is like, what is that? And so it's just filled with comments saying, that's the sun. That's just the sun, my friend. You filmed a very nice picture of the sun setting over the ocean, and it's very nice.
Wow. What is that?
What is that? What is that fiery orb in the sky?
I saw a really like clear view of the moon in the sky the other day. It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, that happens sometimes. You see the moon during the day. But I definitely have my, what is that moment?
What like, is
it
that?
It was such a spectacle. I was struck by the beauty of it all so much that for a moment I thought it might be extraterrestrial.
It could be alien in nature.
Yeah. Do you think that the people in that Facebook group have to explain, like, dog, that's a beautiful sunset. You're experiencing nature's beauty.
Let's look through the comments. There's not a lot of comments on this post. That's the sun. That is called the sun. It is part of our solar system.
This is good. I bet this was bait. This was bait.
While Earth really is flat.
All right. I thought that maybe they were testing the waters to see, like, let's make sure there's nobody who's too wild in here who's going to be like, well, actually, that's, you know, God's bumhole, and, you know, giving some serious mm-hmm. wacko answer. Mm-hmm. But everybody just, you know, temperature check. That's the sun. We might believe the Earth is flat, but we know that's the sun. I don't know if flat earthers believe in the sun. For all I know, they don't.
I don't know much about flat earthers other than, you know, the flat earth thing, which just, like, I just don't see. I would believe you if you told me birds aren't real more than I would believe you that right. the earth is flat. Like, sure. we have pictures of the earth yeah. being an orb. So I just don't understand why.
Don't see why it would be anyone's business except for sailors. You know, if you are on the high seas, that sure. I can understand uh-huh. you having this maybe existential dread about, like, listen, I know they say it's a sphere, but what if we sail off the edge? That'd be scary. That's, you know, that's a 1400 sphere right
sailing
there.
Off the edge is a big fear. I'll grant you
that's
that.
That's a big
yeah,
fear.
Absolutely.
But, like, you know, in living in Boston, Massachusetts, if you're a flat earther, what do you do? What's the worry?
What are you worried about? Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to a Sox game and you're going to walk off the edge of the world? It's not going to happen.
The edge of the world's not next to the Boston Stadium, whatever they call that now. Probably like
Fenway Stadium.
Fenway. No. Is it still Fenway? Yeah, I figured they sold the rights to, because, like, we're like the Cadillac Stadium in New Orleans now. So.
Everything keeps changing. Fenway is surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, it has not seen very many updates. It still looks like a 100-year-old stadium, which is kind of cool. But when I went to a game over the summer, they got some real little seats. Just little tiny seats. Because people didn't have these kind of trunks back then. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
People
they had smaller trunks. You know, because we weren't eating so much processed food. I don't know if you know that. Yeah. Processed food is the thing that kills everybody.
Yeah. They didn't have the big fat ass that I got. You know what I'm saying?
My neighbor went off on vitamins yesterday.
Vitamins? Is that what's the trouble with our society?
Just that they don't work. That they're, you know, only yeah. some of them do work. And then the ones...
Sounds like the opinion of somebody who's not getting enough vitamins.
It kind of sounds like that dude needs to take a multivitamin. And yeah. come back and see me, because I guarantee you, you'll feel a little bit better every morning if you
try
take
to
a multivitamin.
Want a day, man.
Yeah. But it was just really funny. Like, me and Autumn are outside, and my neighbor mows my grass for me. So he's like, you know, he's chopping up some weeds or something while we're outside, cooking. And we're just kind of casually talking. I don't even know how we came up with vitamins. I don't even know why we were talking about vitamins. But he was like, yeah, I just don't think that, I think the only ones that work are like vitamin D. And I was like, that's a weird one to pick. Like, that's
definitely a weird one to pick.
That's just a weird one.
That's the one that my doctor says I'm deficient in. He's like, are you taking your vitamin D supplements? I'm like, yeah, no. Of course. But I don't go out.
Yeah, yeah. But I just don't leave the house. Yeah, people.
I've had a vitamin D deficiency since I was like 12.
People have told me that that's just called Final Fantasy. That's what that is.
Exactly that's what I was going to say. Is that when I got my PS2?
Yeah, that's probably, that's just called video games, my friend. I played some Final Fantasy today.
Oh, you did?
I did. I finished chapter 1 of the Final Fantasy 7 remake.
Oh, okay. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was the combat is real chaotic, I think, even only having two party members during that entire fight. And it's just not what I'm like. I've been playing a lot of turn-based stuff, so it's a lot slower paced. And obviously this has the thing where you can just stop at any time and like issue commands or use items.
It will become so streamlined once you like get the hang of it.
That's kind of what I figured.
By the end of that, because I think I felt the same way when I started. I'm like, what am I doing? Like switching between people, also giving commands, also like it's just and you're mashing square to attack, and there's a lot going on. But I felt like really happy with it once I got the hang of it, which made starting Rebirth a lot better because you're back in it. And they've added a couple things, but those things didn't feel overwhelming because if you play Remake, you have already mastered the combat.
You've already feel like you've done it. And everything, I don't know why. I texted you this. I'm getting a weird sense of FOMO about the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I think it's just that, like, even though I'm disconnected from a lot of like social media nowadays, like I don't really look at Twitter a whole lot. Like I'm not, or like as much as I used to, right? Like I'm not, like I don't have a feed that I am reading every single day. Even just like on like, you know, Blue Sky, where I follow like 100 people, people are like, oh, this is an incredible game. Like, this is just like, it's like people are talking about it in like a revelatory fashion of like, yeah, this is changing video games somehow. And I'm just like, well, I want to change video games. I don't think it's that.
I think it's just the best Final Fantasy in a really long time. You know, even putting aside like story or anything like that, it just, it has an open world, and it has like those, go to this tower to unlock stuff in the area. And then you go to this point on the map and collect this thing, which typically I think people are kind of tired of.
Yes.
But it's presented in such a way that it just feels like, you know, Final Fantasy has been missing something like this. It's an open world with lots of stuff to do. But for me, it doesn't feel like it is just a bunch of busy work. Because first of all, you could ignore most of it, but I am just enjoying like the character stuff happening and the different world, not lore, but just the, you know, characterizes the world as you go through it doing these.
I've heard exploring the world is
things.
Like up there with Elden Ring, is what people are saying, which is like,
oh, wow,
crazy to me. Like, I can't
go that far, but I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it.
Chris is like, I'm going to take all of your hype for this game and just make it a normal video game.
Well, no, I mean, this is like, you know, I'm 10 out of 10 on Cloud 9 with this game. I'm just like trying to look at it objectively and not like, oh my God, this is the best game ever. But ever since they moved to the PlayStation 2, that kind of open world feel of Final Fantasy, because it has gone away. FF10 was the first one on PS2, was very linear, even though it still gave you so many options. You had your full party. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, it's been kind of just this weird thing. I haven't played 12, so I can't actually really comment on that. But 11 was obviously an MMO. 13 had faced a lot of criticisms, very linear, excellent battle system. 14, obviously an MMO. 15, again, it was sort of just like, what's going on here? What are we doing? 16, excellent game, but like, not very much like the other Final Fantasies. So this one, I think everybody is just like really rallying behind, because it feels like this is what Final Fantasy has meant to be. The battle system, the way the world is working, the story, everybody's just getting engaged with it. It helps certainly that you aren't like getting to know a new cast of characters. It's taking a cast of characters that a lot of people are already very familiar with.
That was the weird thing about playing the remake chapter one, is that realizing that I haven't finished that video. I've never finished Final Fantasy VII, but I've probably played that intro like two or three or four times in my life now, just like as a, like maybe once when it came out, and then like another time like when I was like, oh, I'm gonna stream like all the entire Final Fantasy VII game, when they put it on PS4 or whatever. So I played like the first chapter there, and like I feel like I've played it again, and then like it's wild how similar it is, even as someone who is not like cued into Final Fantasy stuff. Like, it's just wild how almost exact the remake is with that stuff. It's kind of crazy. So
It's amazing. That's all I want to do is go back and play it. Because obviously I had that kind of like rough start on my first night when I realized, oh shit, I have to replay this, and wasn't super happy about the way that the demo carried it. But ever since then,
it's been smooth sailing since then.
And there's so much to do on each open world area, because it's not like just gigantic open earth. You can go anywhere, like this is Skyrim. Like, no, it's just there's zones. You go through the zones, which I prefer. It's a little bit more limited. And then you know, follow along with the story, and you leave the zone, and then eventually you can go back and finish up that stuff. So very happy to hear that, because in Remake, you had to finish all the quests on that, the side quests on that chapter before you moved on. And if you didn't, those side quests just couldn't be completed.
Oh, that's good to know. I'll pay attention to that. So, yeah, that I continue to play. Who knows?
I hope you do. I hope you get into it. In this, it seems like I'm sure there will be a cutoff point at some point. But right now I'm on chapter 4, and I've been able to, you know, go back and do all the side quests from chapter 2 and all that stuff, and not have to worry about losing it. Because I just want to know what's going on with the story.
You're super curious about everything that's happened in the story. Is this, so I know the first remake was only like a portion of Final Fantasy VII. Mm-hmm. Is this the rest of the game of Final Fantasy VII, or is this like part 2 of 3? Like, is this
It's part 2 of 3.
Okay, so they've got Final Fantasy VII R3 coming out at some point. So,
and it's interesting. I think that most people dislike this part of the game the most. I don't know if dislike is a strong word, but I think people like the ending, and I think people like the beginning section, which is really packed. You're in the city of Midgar fighting against Shinra. It's a lot of set pieces, and then you know they escape the city. That's the part of that. And then the second part is where it opens up, but you're kind of just like going all over the place and like doing random shit. It seems like this is the portion of the game that people remember the least fondly out of, no, out of the whole game.
I can see that, yeah.
But I think they're doing a good job. They're making an adventure out of it, and they're fleshing stuff out. Some stuff, it's like they're really highlighting some of the weirdness that's present in the original game, but it's sometimes it's a little bit hard to pick up on. And it's cool to see them delve into that stuff. Now, and they're also on top of that adding in new stuff, and it's almost difficult to tell like what has just been clarified and what has been added in or what has been changed. Like,
yeah.
So it's keep me on my toes, and that's what makes me want to like push through it a lot.
It's fascinating. Like Dune 2 came out this weekend, so like social media has just like is just covered in Dune 2 stuff right now. Like they're just pushing it heavily, like actor interviews, everything, right?
Right.
And TikTok, there's a trend to put the current Dune people against the 80s David Lynch Dune people,
yeah,
and kind of have like the side-by-side video, and I'm kind of curious of like that same kind of similar thing with Final Fantasy 7 is just how many differences there are of between this and the remake, because man, that Lynch movie is fucking wild. We watched Dune this weekend. Autumn decided to start the book, and she was like, "Is that movie good?" And I was like, "That movie is fucking amazing."
I'm pretty sure everybody loves that.
Yeah,
movie.
Yeah, the movie is fucking incredible. You should immediately watch it right now if you want to. And she's like, "Let's watch it."
I should probably just watch the movie because I kept doing the thing like, "Oh, I'll read Dune." Like, Dune is obviously a thing you if you're into sci-fi or fantasy, you hear about it your whole life. I just never read it.
It's good.
I feel like. I mean,
I don't have to be the one to tell you, but it's good.
Right. I should just watch the movies, though. Speaking of big old books, we talked about Shogun a little bit, right? Because I watched the first episode of that.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that was coming out. Did you start reading it as well?
No, I already read the book. I read that back in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I tried, well, I started it when I was 12. A friend of mine was like, "You got to read this." I'm like, "This is a big book, brother." And I didn't finish it for like 10 years. But it's crazy how much of that book I remember despite all these years later, and the show is fucking awesome.
Is it really?
I was so surprised.
It's that good?
Yeah, and I saw like rave reviews and I was like, "I won't be the judge of that."
Sure. Yeah.
It's subtle is maybe the word I need to use. Like, you expect a show about samurai, there's going to be like a lot of crazy stuff going on, but it's like a political drama set in Japan in the 1600s, and it somehow is just working really, really well. It feels like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, people do talk about Game of Thrones in the same context of it. Like yeah. that's been the big thing that I kept seeing. So,
just political drama in a big set piece world with lots of stuff going on. Half of it's in Japanese because all of the Japanese people speak Japanese,
mm-hmm.
And then you have this English sailor and his crew, and they speak English, even though they're actually supposed to be speaking Portuguese in universe,
sure.
Which not that that matters, but it's just you're following along with this Englishman as he's kind of taken prisoner by these samurai after washing up on shore and getting dragged into the political power struggle. The emperor, for lack of a better term, has died, and the kid who's going to inherit the throne is too young to lead. So there's this kind of like tenuous alliance between all these warlords that they're in support of the new emperor, but they're all kind of trying to
jockey for position. Yeah,
exactly. And mm-hmm. they're trying to become Shogun, who is like the king general, basically.
Yeah.
You're not technically the emperor, but you run the show.
Who's playing Shogun? That's what I need to know. Who's the actor playing Shogun? I know that's not how it works, but
he's a dude you've definitely seen before. What's his name? Toranaga. Let's see. Great Googling stuff.
I can just look this up. Like I was
Hiroyuki Sanada. You've definitely seen this guy and stuff. He's obviously a Japanese actor, but he's been around.
Yeah, he's been in everything, I'm sure. We started Peaky Blinders.
Oh yeah, you told me that.
And
I told you I would reserve my judgment. Is it good?
I don't think so. No, it's not gotten good yet. Like I'm like two or three episodes in, and it's just real grim. Like it's not like, and the music is so atonal for what, and I don't normally mind like hard guitar riff, kind of like Jack Black live kind of, Jack White kind of like gritty guitar sounding kind of things, and the whole soundtrack is that way, but it just feels very atonal because like nothing exciting is happening on the screen when it happens. It's like this dude's riding a horse down a fucking street or something, and it's like, and I'm just, and I And I don't think I told you this. When we started it on Netflix, the first episode was watched already. And I was like, I don't remember watching this. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah. She goes, the entire time, all you kept saying was that the hats bothered you too much. You just could not stand the hats. I'm like, when was this? And she was like, oh, it was like 10 years ago. It was like a decade ago. God. It was whenever the show had gotten like kind of popular from the first season or something. And I was like, wow. So, and I got over, I eventually got over and watching the first two episodes, I got over my hatred of the hats, but it still lingers a little bit. It still lingers.
Yeah, I'll never get over that. I'm looking up Hiroyuki Sanada. He was in The Last Samurai. He was in John Wick. He is like the main dude in The Ring, like the Japanese version of that. Can't believe I didn't realize that until just now. He's in Lost. He's in lots of stuff. He's in Avengers Endgame. What? Yeah. Well, he's been around. All right. This man's been around.
We just watched Lost. We just watched the first episode.
Well, you have to tell me if you see this man.
Wait, is it Hiroyuki Sanada? Is that who?
Yeah, Hiroyuki Sanada, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I absolutely know this man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's been in everything. But yeah, he's killing it. I mean, I don't even know if he's necessarily the lead role, but he's sort of like the...
He's number one on IMDb.
Figurehead of a lot.
So.
Right, yeah. So, you know. But there's a lot of other important characters, and yeah, it's a dope show. So
the real question is, was he ever on Supernatural?
He's too good for that.
He's too good for that. Yeah, so.
I mean, he wasn't too good for Rush Hour 3, but.
Hey, look, Rush Hour 3 was poised to be a hot property. Rush Hour 3 should have been way better than it was. So that's all I'm saying.
We're watching this show. It's a Japanese. It's a romance anime that Jess likes. It's called The Sign of Affection, and they go to this bar, and for some, it's like an American themed bar, I guess. And there's a TV on in the background of this place, and for some reason, it's always showing like an anime version of Bad Boys 2.
Perfect, perfect.
I'm like, why is that the movie they went?
No notes, no notes whatsoever. oh, he played Scorpion in the Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh,
ooh, interesting.
Should we talk about the X-Files?
Let's do it.
Anyway, yeah, Shogun's really good. You should watch it.
I will add it to our queue.
I think there's two episodes out right now. We just watched the first one. But.